From KQED Public Radio, this is the Capitol Notes podcast for Friday, August 27th. I'm John Myers from KQED. Anthony York, the editor of Capitol Weekly, sharply dressed on this Friday morning.
Yeah, but I still feel like crap. How's that? Is that better?
Well, and the way to start the podcast right off. And we are taping this on Friday morning.
How about
that? Hot off the presses.
I didn't know you worked Fridays.
I do work Fridays.
Something wrong?
No. I used to not work Fridays. I had child care issues. But now I sit here and drink coffee and watch the end of session like you.
Uh-huh. Well, how is it that you get away with wearing a short sleeve shirt today and I have to wear a monkey suit? It's
because
not fair.
I'm not going to the chamber. So there
the
you
chamber.
Go. The chamber.
Yeah. As if there's some sort of... Never mind.
He can't even.
I think that says it all. The chamber is a good way of putting it.
Well, let's
the chair, the chamber.
Let's talk about what's not happening in the two chambers of the state capitol, the Assembly and Senate. We'll talk about what is and what is not happening. Budget is not happening. End of session bill flurry is happening.
There is a flurry of bills.
Yeah, every year there's a flurry of bill.
Yes,
because we get on this as people know, we get at this 2-year end of session deadline, the constitutional deadline. The want to give it your best Latin?
Sine die.
Sine die.
Yeah.
Do you think that's really the Latin way to say it?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'll ask my priest.
Okay, or we'll ask some parliamentarian somewhere.
Yes.
But so we're at the end of session with all of that flurry of bills, and of course, complicated. In the middle of that, for those of us watching everything, is the budget impasse, which now is at day 58 as of Friday.
Hey, we're coming up on the record here, right?
Well, we're
September
coming up.
12th. By the time you're back from your long vacation, we'll be at a new record if we don't have a budget.
No, I'm not going that long. I'm gone for a week. The record is the end of September almost, week.
I thought it was the 12th.
2008. No 2008.
Oh.
But anyway, let's. It depends on which day. Are you counting passage by the legislature
all right, we're
or enacted
off to
by
a,
the governor?
We're getting off to a slow start.
Let's get some caffeine going in here. But yeah, we are going into September without a budget. The safe thing to say is that there have only been three times in state history that the budget impasse has gone into September. We look like we're going into number four. I guess I'm speaking too early that maybe something could happen in the next 4 days, but no, it's not going
to. You know, the bill deadline is August 31st, and it seems pretty clear that there will not be a budget before then. Everyone's focused on bills or major policy bills. And remember, you talked about how the budget was complicating things. Also complicating things are the political realities. Number one, that this is the governor's last year. He'll be termed out. And then the election as well. And so all of that is sort of complicating the budget situation and also leading to some of the extra anxiety surrounding the flurry of bills that are flying around here in the last few days of the session.
Let's talk budget for a moment, or lack thereof. The week started, I would argue the week started fairly cantankerously. I thought the rhetoric was a little more jacked up than it had been before. The governor was down in Santa Barbara County.
Goleta.
In Goleta.
Mary's Danish, don't you go to Goleta?
No? Yes. Yeah. Goleta's a great place. Used to live down north of there.
UC Santa Barbara? No.
No. Worked in San Luis Obispo.
That's north of there. Well, we're north of there now.
We're getting off to a slow start, Anthony.
Okay.
But the governor was down in Santa Barbara County talking about the budget to the Chamber of Commerce down there. And some pretty pointed rhetoric. Public employee pensions are robbing us blind of money for other state programs. Lots more criticism over... things that you can't contract out in the public school system, janitors and landscaping and, a lot of his usual stuff. But again, I think the rhetoric was ratcheted up a little bit. And then the pro tem of the Senate, Daryl Steinberg, when we swore in the latest state senator, Sam Blakesley, on Monday, told a group of reporters, we need a governor who's engaged. This governor isn't engaged and this governor hasn't decided what he wants to prioritize about what he wants in a budget deal. And I thought that was a fairly rocky start to the week, and then things kind of got quiet, and then we had one of those lovely Big Five meetings
yesterday.
On Thursday. Yes,
I missed
the governor
the party.
And the four legislative leaders. I was out in the hall.
I heard.
And there hasn't been one of those Big Five meetings for more than a couple
June.
Of months.
Yeah.
And they came out and said nothing. As a matter of fact, the things that they said, like, well, we met, we laid out the parameters. I mean, that sounds like a discussion you would have in June. And so, we're here.
Well, I mean, a couple of things. Number one, you know, when the governor was in Goleta this week, yes, the rhetoric was sort of ratcheted up, but it's hard for me to take it very seriously. I mean, it seems, you know, covering Arnold Schwarzenegger for 7 years now, it seems like once the guy gets away from Sacramento, he just kind of says things that, like, playing to his audience and as if the press isn't there, as if his own office isn't webcasting the thing. And so he'll say things that he might not say if he were standing in 1190 or in front of his beloved
bear. That's his briefing room here at the Capitol.
Right, in the Capitol. Yeah, there are things he says when he leaves Sacramento that he doesn't necessarily say when he's in Sacramento. And so, yeah, you know, it probably didn't help, but I didn't make too much of it. I don't know
that it necessarily hurt anything.
Right.
I mean, I think that's kind of where you're going, and I wouldn't disagree with that. But I don't think that it, you know, as you and I know, and we all talk about, when the rhetoric can get ugly around here, and sometimes it can mean that everybody's blowing up before they come to a deal,
right,
or sometimes it can mean that they're digging in their heels.
Well, you know,
and I don't know that I characterize this as completely either of those, but I don't see us getting near a deal. I don't hear anybody talking about that. Oh, there are really things in the works that are going to solve the big problems yet.
Well, but there are. I mean, okay. I think one of the things that we've seen movement on, heard from a number of folks this week, is that there might be some movement on the net operating loss issue that businesses.
That's one of the tax breaks,
right,
for businesses.
Right, tax break for business. There were a combination of tax breaks that would be about $2.1 billion. A major one of those is the net operating loss, whether they can carry their losses back a certain number of years. There's a feeling now among some members of the business community that if that were delayed for a couple of years, they would still eventually be able to capture that savings, and so they wouldn't have a problem with delaying that. We're starting to hear that there might be some movement on that particular issue. So that gets us closer. If we were $4 billion apart, then maybe this gets us to $3 billion.
Well, that's assuming we were $4 billion apart, which
the
legislative Republicans kind of threw water on yesterday after the Big Five. But right, that's where the governor
And we'll
said.
See how relevant they are once a deal is announced.
we will see, right. No, so there's movement there. I mean, you know, but that does kind of come back to a broader theme, which you tell me if you kind of hear the same thing I do, which is that when you're looking at something that somebody's got a blink on, you really got this pension reform versus taxes issue.
Right.
Governor wants some kind of reform of the pension system. Democrats want some kind of tax revenue. To me, that's the place, you know. And what you're talking about could be considered tax revenue. I mean, you know, the business tax breaks could. Theoretically, depending
right.
on how it's
It
spun.
Is. It's in the Democrats' revenue package.
Yeah. Depending
yes.
on how it's spun, could be considered tax revenue. The question is, what happens on pension reform on the other end? And even then,
right.
there's still a lot of work to do.
I don't think that the Democrats would agree to a 2-year delay in this one particular tax break in exchange for permanent pension reform. I mean, I just don't. I think that if
I'm not saying that's the end all be all.
No, but if the Democrats were going to give on pension reform, there would have to be a more sustainable long term revenue solution in the budget, ongoing revenue, as they say euphemistically here yeah. in the Capitol. So, you know, I mean, if there's also this issue of a spending cap, right? We saw this week that the governor is now calling again for a spending cap, and there seems to be some maneuvering about a proposal. Again, if the governor's asking for even more, you know, it's going to have to give the Democrats something.
And well, the governor's running out of time on a spending cap and a rainy day fund because those have to go to the voters.
Well, right. So whether he may be running out of time to put it on the ballot in November, but he could do it in 2012.
Do you really think this governor wants to push anything to 2012?
Or call another special election? Hey, why not be going out and stuff?
Fair enough. But do you think this governor really wants to come back after his time in office? And do you think actually then he's able to sell anything to the voters once a new governor has taken office? I don't believe he is.
No, but it might allow him to claim victory while he's making the rounds on the national media legacy circuit. So, I don't know.
The national media legacy circuit. Wait, how can I get in on that?
Hey, well, we'll talk after the podcast. Yeah.
And on pension reform, too, I mean, you know, the governor continues, just quickly, the governor continues his demand for repeal of the 1999 law that modified pensions for public employees, that augmented them in a number of ways. Though I do get some sense that if you look at the negotiated deals the governor has struck with the unions that have already been signed and done, you have 6 bargaining units, right. I think, of the state workforce. There's some sense that that does give Democrats some cover if, in fact, they agree to do something like that, because that's already getting those bargaining units in the position of knocking back some of those benefits.
Right.
And therefore, it's not as though the Democratic legislature started the ball rolling. These bargaining right. units did. And so, which case, you could see a case being made to organize labor, the core constituency of the Democrats, that, you know, this may be one you have to ultimately give up, but not unless you get something you really want,
right.
which is where I go back to my tax argument.
So. Right. And we'll see. And it may be that, you know, Democrats are able to exert some pressure on union leaders, Local 1000, the big SEIU state employee union,
which
is the largest.
Which represents a big chunk of workforce.
About 90,000 workers and is still without a negotiated contract. Them and the prison guards, which the prison guards are never going to cut a deal with Arnold Schwarzenegger. As long as Susan Kennedy is around, you know, it's just never going to happen.
Governor's chief of staff.
Yeah. So as if you're listening to this podcast, I'm guessing.
You already know all those things.
So, you know, if Local 1000 cuts a deal, then maybe the governor won't need the legislation, or maybe the Democrats would feel okay imposing it on essentially a CCPOA. We'll see. I mean, I think this stuff will come together probably sometime next month, but not until then.
And you know, let's remember, too, just last thing on CCPOA, since you mentioned it, they haven't exactly been cozying up to all of the legislative leadership in the Democratic Party, most notably in the state Senate. I mean, they waded into that state Senate race that Daryl Steinberg lost his candidate,
right.
Mary Salas, lost down in the San Diego area to Juan Vargas. They waded into that and spending money in that against the Steinberg candidate. So, I mean, you know, they're not exactly, you know, it's not exactly like if you're Democrats in the legislature telling
right.
the correctional officers, too bad. It's not as though they've all been buddy-buddy before you told them that.
Kind of ironic considering all the former state senators who now work for CCPOA. Don Parada, Jim Batten, Steve Peace. These all, you know. And a couple of years ago when Parada was the head of the Senate, we saw a last-minute effort to get a CCPOA contract through. So,
which gets us into our last-minute bill session. But right, exactly.
Well,
those things happen.
They do. And keep your eyes out. It's still early. It's only Friday. We've got, you know, a full weekend and two more days of the legislative session. Who knows what sort of magical policy proposal may appear before us.
Let's talk about that, because end of session always gets squirrely.
Yes.
Things pop up, another capital euphemism, mushroom bills, things
yes.
that grew in the dark and all of a sudden pop up and there they are. A lovely treat, unless they're poisonous.
You know why the mushroom got invited to the party? Because he's a fun guy.
And that would be the lame comedy podcast. Anthony's apparently in the wrong room. So end of session coming up. Bills can pop up out of nowhere, plus bills that have been on the agenda for a long time that are kind of coming to a head here to what happens.
Yep.
So what are you you're dressed up to go over to session today. What are you watching?
Renewable energy is a big bill. This is a bill that would demand that California have a third of its electricity be from renewable sources
strengthens
by the year 2020.
The current law is lower than that.
Right. There's a right now it's 20%, I believe, right? Is that right? 20% by 2012. Anyway. There's
details.
A big fight
needs the details.
A big fight going on with organized labor, essentially about whether the power comes from California sources or out of state sources. If it comes from inside California, and the power plant companies say, hey, we need to streamline environmental regulations to get these new plants built. Anyway, this
another CEQA fight.
This is a big. That's the California Environmental Quality Act.
See, now you're in the process of that. But that's essentially what that comes back to in some ways,
it's a big
right?
fight. There was a bill last year. It was vetoed by the governor. Again, the governor wants this as part of his legacy. He's issued executive orders to the Air Resources Board to go out and do their own thing and then has sort of stepped back from that. Anyway, renewable energy, big fight, something we're watching.
We also got a big fight over a ban on plastic bags.
Yes, that has been a
Assembly Bill 1998,
yes.
which would ban them in large stores, would be an expansion of what some communities around California, effectively an expansion.
Right. Eventually there would be a ban and then a per bag tax, right?
Right.
So
of course, Republicans hate this, and the business community hasn't been so thrilled, different sectors of the business community. The governor had some nice things to say about it a while ago. Now the governor's office is expressing skepticism of the current form of the bill.
Right.
And hinting that it may not pass muster with him if it passes the legislature. Right. And,
you know, everybody's lobbied up. You know, Fabian Nunez, the former Speaker of the Assembly, is working for the for a company that is involved in the manufacture of plastic bags. And so it's getting
so the
fun
out speaker,
there.
Wait, so I didn't know this. A former speaker is lobbying against passage?
Not lobbying, because he's not a registered lobbyist.
Okay,
he's merely consulting.
He's consulting on the no side.
On the no side, correct.
Even though it is probably a Democratic priority. Very interesting.
Well, it's
bedfellows,
a priority of the speakers, absolutely.
Yeah, but priority of the speakers, but also Democratic priority of environmentalists and priority of core Democratic constituencies.
Although
the former Democratic Assembly Speaker is working on the other side.
Yep. It's funny how that works. Also, former Democratic lawmaker Manny Diaz is working on the no side as well. So, and this is also being caught up in some of the friction between the houses that we see this time of year. That plastic bag bill is an assembly bill, AB 1998, by Julia Brownlee from Santa Monica. And it's now sitting in Senate in the Senate Rules Committee, which is to say under the thumb of Daryl Steinberg. And, you know, there's a lot of bills that the Senate wants to come out of the Assembly, a lot of bills the Assembly wants out of the Senate, and, you know, there's a lot of what we call hostage-taking this time of year, and that bill is one of the hostages now.
I was about to say hostage-taking, you know, exactly. This is, because this is an annual dance, which I think...
the hostage dance. Dun, dun,
dun, dun, I've heard of that. But, you know, this is an annual dance that we are familiar with. And other people around the Capitol are familiar with. But I do believe this is another one of those moments where the public would just look at this and go, are you kidding me? That we play this game a lot of years between the two houses, you know, personal politics, this idea, that idea. Are you going to give me my bill? I'm not going to give you yours if you don't give me mine. And on and on and on.
And what's amazing is that even in term limits, or maybe because of term limits, as leaders and the faces of the leadership change so rapidly— this stuff just doesn't. I mean, this has been, you know, in the 15 years or so that I've been covering the Capitol, every August, you know, we see this. And it seems so inextricably woven into the fabric of the way the Capitol works. But I think you're right. I mean, I think that, you know, were this to be a more prominent and prevalent and well-reported story, it would just add to some of the cynicism and skepticism that people feel about the way their legislature works.
A few other bills that are kicking around. I don't know if you've got any other on your list, but people are watching the bill that would change the age for kindergarten, which has been kind of a big issue, a financial and a policy issue that would not allow four-year-olds essentially to go to kindergarten. There's also the annual spay-neuter your pets bill. That
died
is still...
yesterday.
Oh, sorry. I thought
died
it was still
yesterday.
Rolling around. It's officially dead now?
Rolling around. No, never mind.
There are too many bad...
That one got snipped in the assembly yesterday.
See, I was slow to the take on that one. Okay, well, so scratch that a spay-neuter bill off of there.
For now, it'll be back.
Always is. What else? Anything else you watching?
There's a big horse racing bill that the speaker has championed that would... change the laws on certain kinds of wagering. It's been a big bill that's pit some racetracks against others and some gaming interests against the tracks. And
would allow some wagering that only a few other places do now that it's not legal currently in California.
Right. And a lot of these so we said the plastic bag bill. We said RPS. There's a couple of health care bills that would begin setting up the exchange to implement the federal health care law that a lot of the HMOs are fighting tooth and nail. Something tells me that this governor will not sign those bills, but we'll see. Who knows? And then there's a lot of last-minute things that come up. There was a what we call a gut and amend where you know a new bill just sort of materializes out of nowhere. It appeared last week. A mushroom bill, right?
A mushroom from a gutting. Yes, go ahead.
A gutted mushroom. It's a bill by Norma Torres that the speaker is involved in that would streamline some environmental regulations for vacant storefronts if new, you know. So, and this would benefit large retailers like Walmart and Home Depot and things like that. Of course, you ask the speaker's office, they'll tell you it's all about jobs. So I think that... you know, one of sort of the bigger narratives, again, that we're going to see, and we saw this at the end of session last year, and it divides Democrats. We're going to see divisions between environmentalists and labor. And a lot of times we see that the environmentalists have a stronghold in kind of the coastal areas that are mostly white, mostly affluent, and versus a lot of areas in which labor is strong, which are, you know, where you have a lot of Latino and African-American representation, more working class areas. And this is a big internecine fight within the Democratic Party as well. So that's always interesting theater here for the last few days of session.
And you know, one other just thing that I think is worth mentioning quickly on bills is this package of bills that were all in response to the Bell scandal, right, and all of this transparency stuff.
Right. Did you read The Skinny this week?
I did. Yeah. I read about where this is going. I'm trying to give you a little promo here in capitalweekly.net.
Capital with an O.
And I find this interesting, you know, so we got a great big show of these bills, and that's not to say that most of these bills won't move forward. Whether they ever would prevent another Bell type thing from happening remains to be seen, but there's a lot of focus on apparently transparency. That's kind of what I'm getting at here.
Right.
And one of the bills by Assemblymember Allison Huber would say that the legislature would have to post its salaries and the salaries of its staffs online. And now we're hearing, as you've reported, there's resistance in the Senate to that. And maybe we'll just do it as an internal House rule that we'll post those.
Because the Senate doesn't pass bills telling the Senate what to do.
Right. Rather than pass a law that would be actually codified in the state books.
They just tell everybody else what to do.
And one of the things one of the arguments, too, that this stuff is already out there thanks to Capital Weekly.
Capitalweekly.net/salary.
Because you guys have had a salary little machine, a thingamabob for a while that you can type in somebody's name and see what they make.
It's a pain in the butt, though. We input that data manually. And so while I thank the Senate for trying to protect Capital Weekly's business position as providing this data almost exclusively, I think that in the interest of good government, we'd still like to see it out there and, you know, not have to deal with inputting this data manually four to five times a year.
I would be in agreement with that, and we'll see where it goes. We'll
okay.
See where it goes.
I'm glad we agree.
So quickly, our other favorite topic on this podcast, this lovely election season. The race for governor, Meg Whitman, Jerry Brown.
Jerry Brown awoke from his nap.
Well, but talk about a race that felt like it got a little ugly.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is, and I don't know that it's so much ugly maybe as it is, it's just awakening. I mean, you know, this is, we're coming up on the Labor Day weekend. This is the historic start of campaigning. The campaigns have been going now for a while. We could debate whether they've been going a lot. As you said, Brown hasn't been doing a lot of campaign events, all of a sudden is.
But they've been going about $120 million worth. So far.
Oh, that's the Whitman campaign, yeah. Yes.
Right.
But again, rhetoric ratcheting up a little bit, you know, back and forth sniping, questions about...
whose jet is it anyway?
Yeah. Jerry Brown's pension, Jerry Brown using the state-owned plane, Meg Whitman's jet with eBay, a sniping back and forth. What else here?
These are the big pressing issues facing California.
These are, aren't they?
Yes, they
are. These are the things that Californians need to know before they pick their next governor.
But I think that we can expect a lot more of this the last 10 weeks. I mean, I just look, it's a close race. And I think that, you know, Jerry Brown is going to try to set out a sort of a positive case for who he is. And I think Whitman has done a lot of that already and has made her competitive. But I think that down the home stretch here, her strategy is going to be largely aimed at taking down Jerry Brown. And I think that, you know, the Poizner-Whitman race was ugly. Some of that was Steve Poizner's doing. You know, he's a very aggressive campaigner. But I see no reason to believe that this race will be any different in terms of tenor and the quality of the debate of the campaign.
But for right now, the moment that we're speaking, right, this very moment, we've got a – it seems like to me the Whitman campaign has got a little bit of a good cop, bad cop thing going on. You know, they certainly would not say they've coordinated and no one would dare speak their name. But an independent expenditure ad out there that has a relatively good ad buy – From what not only what the Brown campaign has said, but what the backer of the group has said, relatively good for the short term. We're talking about an ad from the Small Business Action Committee, which
I should step in and correct you. It's not an independent expenditure ad. It's an issue ad.
It's an issue advocacy ad, which is different.
And so the Whitman campaign can coordinate.
Okay.
So there would be no prohibition.
Though they claim not to be coordinated, right. But fair enough.
Okay.
Thank you for the legal distinction. You're absolutely right because I actually am working on a story about issue advocacy ads.
Right.
I haven't had enough coffee this morning. But the larger point I'm trying to make. Let me just get to my big point here. Let me get the details, okay. Anthony. Come on.
All right.
Well, why do we do details? What are we, journalists?
We could do, if we don't do them, let's not do them correctly.
Okay. Nice. Ah, good. Back, touche. The larger point here simply is that those ads are critical of Brown. And those appear to be the only critical ads of Brown really on the air right now. I mean,
right.
We don't know what happened to the airplane ad that they put out at the end of the week, the Whitman campaign. The Whitman campaign's been running these positive ads. Positive Meg, this is what she does,
right.
Creating jobs. Da, da, da. There's a good cop, bad cop thing going on for now.
Now, I
would agree with you that can only last so long because Whitman's got all the money, and she's going to have to go negative on Brown, you would think.
But they're taking a page from the Brown campaign. I mean,
a good cop, bad cop of the independent groups, the right. unions who have been beating up Whitman. Exactly.
And Brown has even said this, hey, I need to be the good guy. I need you guys to attack. I mean, remember there was that famous mm-hmm. video clip. And I mean, that's sort of how it works. I mean, I wouldn't be – it makes sense. You've got to have surrogates out there to kind of do your dirty work. It's good politics. And so, yeah, I think we'll see a lot of that. But I wonder now as the Brown campaign ramps up what the future of the union independent efforts are going to be. I mean, you don't want to have too much different messaging out there heading up to Election Day. You want to have sort of a focused, consistent message. And so, I keep hearing stories about various groups, you know, morphing into other things here.
Maybe you feel, and this is a reasonable point, if this is what you're saying, that maybe the work of the unions is largely done.
Right.
Because what their goal was, as we have said all along, was to keep Brown even through the summer when he was raising money.
Right.
And now it's going to be the Brown campaign's job with 20-some million dollars in the bank to run ads starting sometime
close to 30. Close to 30.
Okay, good. They're even better. Close to 30. Good
yeah.
for them.
Yeah.
But the point is now it's going to be their job to run the ads, make the case,
right.
have their own coordinated, focused message on what they want to do.
And he can, you know, protest from Gary South notwithstanding. I mean, Brown is now fully funded for the last 10 weeks of the campaign. I mean, it's hard to spend more than $3 million a week on TV and have it mean anything. So,
You could ask the Whitman campaign.
I said it's hard, not impossible.
but that does get to the other point that we've talked about before that, you know, it just bears repeating or mulling over again, which is how much money can she spend and how much, you know, again, it's not a question of resources for Meg Whitman. It's a question of effectiveness and does it really get you anything at a
right.
certain point when you are, you know, taking every single drop of oxygen, it seems, sometimes from the world of messaging.
Yeah. And at what point does that begin to work against you? And I'm sure everybody will have the definitive answer the day after Election Day.
Mm-hmm. Right? November 3rd,
yes.
We will all know what's going on.
Yes.
And
tell you that we knew it all along.
And we should say that there is a poll out there this week. We could debate the pros and cons of the Rasmussen poll.
But Rasmussen, which typically skews a little right.
Mm-hmm. And it's a robo poll. It's a phone poll. It's not a, you know, whatever. Yeah. Although Rasmussen has had some numbers in the past that have not been that far off of general election final numbers, but whatever.
We all have.
We all have. Yeah, right. Our own internal musings. But Rasmussen has a poll out this week that shows Whitman up by 8. Again, I haven't seen any of the actual breakouts of that to know exactly how that works, but that's a poll that is floating out there. Take it for what you will.
Whitman's own campaign, you know, doesn't make too much of that poll. They say, look, it's close, it's competitive, you know, maybe we're up a couple points. We fully expect in a few weeks we'll be down a couple of points. And it's interesting that they themselves are downplaying that poll.
Well, so. And they also are working hard to lower expectations of where they should be and what they are doing.
Right.
You know, that's a fascinating thing to watch. I just have to mention it really quickly. This continual message from the candidate herself and from her staff, her advisors, her surrogates, or whatever.
Her well-paid staff.
We're just lucky to be even with Jerry Brown.
Well, lucky. No, it's not lucky. It was part of the plan all along.
Sorry, right. We're executing
we
our plan.
Right,
the execution of our plan said we would be even with Jerry Brown.
Am I crazy or do I remember a press call with Stu Stevens and Jim Brulte a couple of weeks before?
Those are Steve Poizner supporters.
Primary saying mm-hmm. that this was the Poizner plan all along, that they were exactly where they wanted to be.
And
how'd that work out?
I don't think that's exactly where they wanted to be.
I'm not making the comparison. I'm just saying.
But it's a fascinating thing, and we continually hear it. That is the big push, the big spin out of the Whitman campaign. You know, we're right where we want to be. We've got him right where we want him.
That's right.
And we'll see if that
works
out.
Again, we'll know that on November 3rd. So. No,
and we will, but something tells me we will not avoid prognosticating before that, right?
No, of course not.
Because that's what we do.
That's right. And we'll just ignore the stuff that was wrong, right?
Yes. Okay. Indeed. Okay. Indeed.
I'm getting this down.
So please ignore the rest of everything that is wrong in this podcast as you mull it over the weekend. And programming note, no podcast next week.
Boo.
No podcast.
Is it because it's my birthday? Is that why?
Is it your birthday?
It is my birthday.
Well, take the week off.
Thanks.
And I'm taking the week off. I'm on vacation next week. So we will have to fill you back in on end of session. What Anthony and I would both predict would be a special session for the budget.
Yeah.
And wherever the governor's race is in that first week of September, we'll come back.
We'll bring our mops.
Yeah. We'll be back. So check us back in a couple of weeks. For Anthony York from Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers from KQED. See you next time.